Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
There's a little air vent on the cabin hatch, and I was sure that was sealed, and that was the thing letting in the water. But before I figured that out, I was frightened because I don't know why this thing's just going to fill up like I'm in a watery coffin here. So I was scared, yeah.
Mary, I have to say, I just feel completely fraudulent. I can't even do 10,000 steps a day. It's a torment. It's not just a challenge. I mean, it's actually a torment, and it's mostly unfulfilled. So I don't know. To talk to somebody who does what Damien does, rows across the entire Atlantic when he can't swim.
But
luckily enough, I know that his parents described him as nuts. So I hope he doesn't mind if I also think, I've never heard anything so ridiculous.
But as well as the rowing, and I know you spoke about the 10,000 steps, and I'm, you know, patting myself on the back if I do a 5K walk. He's done the 257-kilometre hike, ultra marathon across the Sahara. And he's got a Heineken Cup medal, and he's rugby with the Norwegians and Connacht and Leinster. And yeah, and then he rows a boat across the Atlantic.
So that's why you know I'm a complete fraud then. Right.
I hope
at least you do runs and things.
Walks now.
Yeah. No, but you used to be a really serious runner.
I do.
Yeah. I mean, you have credentials. I've none whatsoever.
Not compared to what what's achieved by the person across the table from us. And can I just say, you know, we've seen your documentary. I couldn't believe how tall you are, Damien. I don't know how you fit in that boat.
Just about the cabin on one of those boats. So those boats are only about 6.2 meters long, and the cabin is 2 meters. And I'm touching, like, I'm 197. So
you're almost 2 meters tall,
almost
right?
Almost 2 meters, yeah. So
so like, actually, you're really like two people rowing that boat. Seriously.
I mean, you could put it that way, you know.
I train very, very, very hard.
Have you got the energy levels really of two people? You practically had to have that, didn't you, on that trip across the Atlantic because you lost your companion. You didn't actually lose him as such,
thankfully.
He had to be taken off the boat.
Yeah, he was medically evacuated on day 13 due to exhaustion. Basically, he has an amazing story himself. Like where he was paralyzed about 5 years before this, and given 5% chance to ever regain any sensation below his belly button. And then he went on this journey where he just proved all the prognoses incorrect and regained sensation and relearned to regain his mobility and relearned to walk. So even the fact that he made it this far is, you know, testament to his character. There was some unseen parts to the preparation, unseen parts to his physical condition post that accident that we couldn't have really foreseen the effects that would have on the ocean and just the demands of an ocean row, which are extraordinary. You know, it's the boat moves forward 24 hours a day, you know.
Were you not tempted on the day that it was decided he had to be medically evacuated to say, I'm going home?
The short answer to that is no. I was very driven to do my best in attempting to complete this journey and voyage. So it was very important to me, very meaningful. So the minute the call was made by the doctor, well, not the minute, but, you know, as we waited, so basically what happened was this big Singaporean tanker was rerouted to medically evacuate Gussie, who was my partner. We waited maybe 6 or 7 hours and you're just floating, right? We were told to stay where we are. Where were we going to go, right?
Where exactly were you?
We were about 550 nautical miles off the coast of New York.
Right.
So not that far in terms of, you know, how the progress we'd made at that point.
And within sight of you, was there much apart from water?
Absolutely nothing.
No.
We didn't see horizon, right? We didn't see anything from day two. I think we lost sight of the lights of Long Island sometime over, you know, that first kind of 24 hours. And then that's it. You have just one view all the time.
But do you know what... I find fascinating thinking about that is that as well as being so physically fit, it's fascinating to think what kind of fitness you need and what mental fitness. And to look inside your head and your mentality and see, you know, how you are, I suppose, empowered to keep going when you can see nothing all around you and when you're companion has to be evacuated.
So it's a much more psychological challenge and emotional challenge than it actually is physically. You know, it's physically it's relatively achievable with good preparation, but mentally and emotionally, that's where the real challenge comes. To give you a kind of snapshot of that, so the distance is 3,000 miles, I rode somewhere around 3,800 miles.
Why?
It's because I went backwards about 500 miles over the course.
Control over that?
No, because an ocean rowing boat's very manipulated by wind. So, and the North Atlantic is very inconsistent in the direction. There's no what they call trade winds. You know, there's no consistent direction of the wind. So it's all these little microclimates. So it got to a stage where when I dropped the oars, I knew I was going backwards and there was nothing I could do. But of course, I have to rest, right? So all of that hard work has been eaten up. In front of your eyes, you can see the mileage that you work so hard for going on the little GPS.
How do you keep yourself psychologically fit for that?
So the essence of that is meaning. It's purpose. What does it mean to you? You know, that's the most important thing. That's what creates the ceiling in how far you can push mentally, you know. And it meant a lot to me. You know, I had built up a deep picture of the impact that it would make on me and that it was making on me at that time just by embracing this challenge and attempting it. And then other people around, you know, so I had certain pictures, visuals in my mind that were big drivers for me. So one of them was that I kept coming back to was the bonfires of Arran. So it was getting to the bonfires and that picture of, you know, for me, that was a deep connection with people who knew more about the Atlantic Ocean than anyone on this island, you know, and had a relationship with it and saw the fury of it more than anyone. So I was pushing towards them. We had people from Inishere who'd helped a lot with the project. So I literally had connection there with that, and it was safety. So it was this massive driver, and it was achievement as well. So it was this huge driver for me to get to this picture of the bonfires of Arran. And the other picture I held very closely to me was a visualization technique. So the picture I always saw was me rowing into Galway, kind of, you know, weather beaten, but
alive.
Yes, definitely alive.
Exhausted.
Exhausted, but like, you know,
euphoric, probably.
Euphoric, yeah. From the challenge and having made it, right? But instead of seeing that through my eyes, I started to imagine what would that look like through my father's eyes.
Oh my goodness.
And what would he feel to see his son achieve that and that picture. And like, even now I get quite like, I can feel it, like it just raises my energy. And that's what you're trying to do when you get into those states. You're dragged down, right?
By and what would he feel? Would he not be looking at
pride?
You and saying,
well, you said he thought you were nuts.
Egypt. Now, I'm so proud of you, but you are a big Egypt.
They wouldn't. Like,
they wouldn't.
No, they really wouldn't. They're very supportive. And they know this is a way of living that gives me a lot, you know, on deep levels. So they're, and they're probably on some level desensitized to it, you know.
Because like, oh, yeah, you're going to do it anyway.
It's going to do it anyway.
They're well used to it.
And excuse the pun, they're rowing behind it in this case. And I think he would have felt a lot. It would have been an emotional image for him and experience, and he would have felt deep pride, I think. And
also a huge relief.
And absolutely, huge relief. Yeah.
And did you always have an adventurous spirit, Damien, like from way back?
I think, yeah, I'm a deeply curious person. So I think that leads to exploration, right? And it leads to an exploration, leads to adventure. You know, you're stepping into the unknown when you explore. So, you know, when we kind of sit down as a family and we're, you know, it comes up in discussion, it often comes back to a story of holidaying up in the Inishowen Peninsula, and we were staying in Buncrana. We went up to Malinhead for the day, and I had this thing when we got there that I wanted to touch the tip of Ireland.
How old were you?
About 13, I think, 12, 13. So I disappeared, right? according to my parents, like I was there 1 minute and I was gone. And
you're talking about the edge of a cliff now, right?
I was trying to get, I didn't know, right? I was like, that's where it is. That's the tip for Ireland. I was trying to get down this cliff, and I got down far enough where I was like, this is not safe. So I came back out of it, you know? And when I was coming back up, happy head on me, my father was fuming. Like he never gets mad. I think that's what marked everyone, and that's why everyone remembers it in our family. He's very, quite a relaxed, you know, generally his disposition would be that way, and he was angry, like, because he thought I'd obviously, you know,
parents' nightmare,
exactly. So that's, you know, when we reflect on, you know, where's this adventurous spirit come from, or that's the first inkling that it was there, I suppose. Mm-hmm. That story,
yeah, that was the Mary and Joseph moment, wasn't it?
Funnily enough, my parents are Mary and Joe, so
there
literally
you go.
Was
yes. Yeah. Tell me, out on the ocean, how many days were we talking about?
112 days it took
days.
In total, yeah.
A lot of them, most of them on your own, really, now. Most
yeah.
of them on your own.
99 without seeing a person.
Oh, and not, nobody to talk to. Talk about the waves. I mean, you're not rowing across a mill pond. It's the ocean. We've just been through storm after storm after storm. And people of the islands, you know, the Aran Islands, they know waves.
Mm.
And they know how horrendously high they can reach.
Mm.
What was the highest waves you had to navigate?
So on day 24, this is the way I remember it, right? In the day had a happening. So day 24 was the scariest day I've ever had on an ocean rowing boat, because there was a tropical storm coming off the east coast of America. So a tropical storm is what we would call a hurricane. In America, they call it a tropical storm. So 24 hours before it got to me, it was just downgraded. So it lessened in its intensity. But still, we're talking about over 100 kilometer an hour winds, 10, 12 meter waves. I know this is coming, right? So I've locked down the boat. I've secured the boat. I've put out a thing called a power anchor, which is an anchor you use to hold your position. It's a big parachute, basically, that holds about 2 tons of water in it. So I've deployed that, and I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for this thing to come. And it's forecast to last 20 hours. And in the first 5 hours of that 20, I capsized 3 times. And why it was so scary was because you're not meant to capsize on power anchor. The power anchor is meant to hold you secure in the ocean. So that was very destabilizing mentally.
And was your colleague with you then?
No.
No, you're completely on your own.
Yeah,
then.
I was on my own at this point, which, you know, in hindsight was probably better. I can't imagine two of us in the cabin in a capsize. And
so had you to right the boat yourself?
No, the boats will self-right as long as the two cabins. So there's two cabins on either end of, you know, it's about 6.2 meters. As long as they're sealed, they're, what happens is when it does get turned over, they're air pockets. And then all the weight, the ballast is underneath. So it just, physics will just self-ride itself. The other thing was I got water into the cabin and I didn't know where that was coming from. So, you know, those two things combined in this big maelstrom meant that it was a very, to put it mildly, unsettling day. And yeah, the next 15 hours is just, you know, after those first three capsizes, I'm just waiting for that fourth one. And I know I have 15 hours until this thing relents. And I'm just waiting, just lying there helpless, like, and that's very difficult.
Were you frightened?
I was, because especially until I figured out what was wrong, there's a little air vent on the cabin hatch and I was sure that was sealed and that was the thing letting in the water. But before I figured that out, I was frightened because I don't know why this thing's just going to fill up, like I'm in a watery coffin here. So I was scared, yeah.
Were you facing death? Did you think you were facing death or had that come into your head?
I'm very much it sounds a bit, you know, inhuman, but when I'm in those states, I'm thinking about what can I control here? What's the process? What do I have to figure out? What's the threat? How do I mitigate the threat? Where is it coming from? So I'm very much putting my concentration into what can be done to, you know, prevent that possibility from happening.
So you weren't saying the rosary then?
No, I wasn't. No, I was very, I was trying to be proactive and trying to figure out what was going on. And
Were there lovely moments as well? I mean, looking at the documentary, there did seem to be some nice times.
There wasn't a huge amount, if I've been truly honest with you, but there was, like, the moments that stand out are the connection with wildlife in its natural habitat. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, literally 1,000 miles from a ticket booth or a kiosk, you know, you're in some way connecting with whales.
Dogs. Did you feel you were connecting?
Yeah. Like they're very curious. They'll come by the boat, like, and, you know, one night it was pitch black. I'd say it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was trying to get into that back cabin to get something out. I can't remember what it was. And I got the noise of a whale breathing, I'd say about 2 meters from the boat. Like, so I couldn't see. I just heard it. And you imagine now, I haven't heard anything apart from the wind in maybe 30 days. The fright of my life. I fell backwards.
Here?
Like,
who's
what
here?
Was that? Yeah, and I realized it was a breaching whale. With they were just, you know, breeding. So, you know, they do come by. And we had, I reckon, between 50 to 60 days straight of dolphins, pods of dolphins coming by the boat.
And were you glad of them?
Oh, the
it's company, I suppose.
The difference they make, like the emotions they elicit within you are just, like, I find it a little bit indescribable. Like, it's a happiness, it's positivity, it's awe, it's privilege, it's elation, you know, it's all of this. Like, I don't know what, it's just, it could be having a really difficult day, you know, like just trying to do the work. Like, you were talking 12 hours of rowing every day and maybe not making ground, right? So you find yourself, you know, just toiling and struggling. And it's, you know, there's emotions connected with those, you know, it's frustration and it's anger and it's agitation. And then you have a pod of dolphins that come by the boat and all of a sudden you're just a different person. You know, your body language changes. You just have this... You have this change, right? This, like, state change that just by that connection, just by them being kind of around you. So they're the beautiful.
Them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, if you have a chance to talk to anybody else but yourself, talk to the boat a bit, talk to the ocean in terms of at least, you know, letting it know I'm not lying down here. But yeah, you definitely talk to the the wildlife. So I had
lovely.
Really? Yeah, no, like those are the really kind of special days.
Were you able to communicate with land?
Yeah, so
with home, with kids,
I was,
with your wife?
Thankfully, yeah. I had, we have sat phones on board, which are, you know, really important for emergency stuff and then for keeping comms with my parents. So I said, so I've done two Ocean Rows, right? And first one is back in 2018. And on that row, when I got off the other side, I'd never talked to my parents as much. I didn't talk to them when I lived in the same house as much as I talked to them than I did on that row. They were on to me every second day, and it was just talking. It was just, you just lie there, you know, you'd have, I'd take a few hours, an hour here, an hour there to rest, and you just make the phone call every, you know, every other night at, say, a certain time. And it might be the same news from the two nights before that, but you didn't care. You just wanted to hear a voice. And less on this row because I was, I suppose, more desensitized to the solitude.
And Damien, tell us about your own family, because you've got your wife, Rochelle, and two little girls now.
Yeah.
What's it like for them? And what's it like for you being away from them?
On both sides, it's difficult. It's a big sacrifice for me to ask. You know, Rochelle, I would have left, and very much the communication would have been, it would probably be 2 months, you know, that we're going for 60 days, world record back in 60 days. It nearly ends up in doubling that, right? Double that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of communication going on there, where, like, she is single parenting, and that is very difficult at the best of times. And then, you know, she needs a vent. So she, you know, and I'm accepting, and I'm the one who, you know, I'm the one who manufactured this situation. So I have to take that. And then that's really helpful for her. But then, you know, you, as a dad in that situation, you get a lot of guilt, you know, like it's tough, like, it's an unseen challenge of the challenge, you know, dealing with that. And you realize that, you know, I'm making a phone call today, and, you know, I'm going to have to tell her it's probably going to be 80 days rather than the 70 I told her it was last week. And then, you know, because it's just got so slow, like, and that's going to go down really badly.
That's
like,
yeah,
it's tough on both sides of the coin.
But when you think of your, now they're very young, aren't they?
Yeah.
Elodie and Fia, what ages are they?
Elodie will be 3 in April and Fia is 5 months.
Okay, so it's probably a bit early. But what would you like them to take away from your adventures and from your stories and the, you know, the incredible exploits?
I'd really like them to take just a way of embracing life and living, you know, that, you know, coming back to that, that adventurous spirit, that explorer mindset, that openness to step into the fire of life and expose yourself, and you know, you'll feel vulnerable, but there's absolute richness and beauty in that vulnerability, you know. So just to step in and don't let fear dictate your actions. I think if both of them got a bit of that would be enough.
The alternative is to have a job with a salary, with a pension, with a monthly income to pay a mortgage.
And,
there's another area of vulnerability. How do you manage all that?
Yeah, I'm attracted to that sometimes because of the safety of it, right?
Yes.
But I always come back to, like, this is your only shot. It's no dress rehearsal, like, you know, and you might as well do what you love and that fills you, which... so much contentment and peace and excitement and profound rewards. Like, so you got to look at ways outside of that to try and make an income. So speaking is a big thing for me. So corporate speaking, and we're finishing up a tour of a national theatre tour at the moment, and looking at kind of doing another tour, the same show, but later in the year in new venues and that. So, you got to kind of be creative on that side of things. And
you've got to be an entrepreneur as well.
Yes, for sure, yeah. I started a business most recently with a good friend of mine, Mac Dara, where we call it the Iron Mind Institute. Iron Mind Institute.
The Iron Mind Institute.
Yeah. So it's about, I've developed, as I said, frameworks and methods and tools. So I've put all of that into a kind of experience. So we bring people to Connemara and we put them through these kind of long duration challenge, mental and physical challenges. But we teach them how to manage their mind while they're going through it. So they build that association between you know, what they're doing in terms of the input to control their mind and then the rewards. So we're trying to make those kind of
patterns. Who's your audience for that, Damien?
I think it's people who have been touched some way by the power within their body, you know, who are exploring their own physical capacities. It might be true triathlon, Ironman, marathons, CrossFit, you know, people, that's the connection that'll bring people to us if they've made that connection some way in their life. And they're like, because it's a very compelling, addictive state to have touched or be touched by. You want more of it because it brings great levels of control and therefore reward.
And is it a hard sell for most of us?
It is very hard.
Really? You want to change
us?
Pain
doesn't sell, right? And we're talking about, we got to push people into these states where they're, you know, they're full of doubt and they're full of what I would say is mental vulnerability and fragility. And then when you're there, that's where you got to teach, right? And that's what's going to mark people if you can get them through those situations.
Through.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah.
Changing Times, the Alan Wood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The other things that you have done, because they aren't all related to the sea, that you've done so many. Tell me, just sort of list off the other things and how or why you chose them.
When I finished professional rugby, I made a goals list that said before I am 40. So I was 35 at that point. Before I'm 40, I will. And I had like 7 endings to that sentence. So the first one I approached on that goals list was before I'm 40, I will run the Marathon des Sables, which is, it's known affectionately as the world's toughest foot race. It's a 257 kilometer ultramarathon across the Sahara Desert.
Oh, it's across the desert, right.
Self-supported.
Of course it is. Yeah.
So, when the day you start, it's 6 days, and the day you start, you have everything on your back to survive from
as well.
All for the whole 6 days, yeah. So you have your bedding, you have your clothing, you have your food, you have your cooking equipment and utensils. So, you know, you have a bag that was roughly 15 kilos on my back to start with. And every participant wears on their chest their name, their race number, and their nationality. So I'm walking around, surrounded by a lot of small French ultra runners, and they see that at Damien Ireland. They don't think I speak French because I played rugby in France for 5 years, so I speak French pretty well. And I'm hearing all these comments like, "What the hell's your man doing here? Look at the size of your man." So I was like, "Yeah." I was hearing it all. Even though you guys don't know, I understand what you're saying.
And were you able to embarrass them?
I don't know. I was able to, you know, I got through it and
fair play.
I didn't exactly have huge aspirations in, you know, winning any races or anything, but it was just a challenge for myself to take on. It was, and it's amazing, you know, six run like, you know, there's one stage in it that is a double marathon, so it was about 84 kilometers. So that means you go through the night. You have these moments where, you know, you're kind of coming over the top of a dune and you're heading down into this valley and all you can see is like, you know, millions, billions of stars in the sky. And then there's this trail of glow sticks because every participant has to put a glow stick on their back, you know, for identification in case they come off the trail and get lost. So this beautiful trail of glow sticks in front of you. And then there's just a billion stars in the sky. You know, you have moments like that, which are, you know, amazing.
And you've done mountaineering as well.
And then went into mountaineering after that. I'm still attempting, I suppose you might say, to climb the seven summits, which is the highest mountain on each continent. I have five of them completed.
And which ones have you left to do now?
I have Mount Everest and...
Sweet Lord. You had to say the bad word. So Everest, right. What's the other one then?
Mount Vinson. It's in Antarctica.
Oh, in Antarctica. Yeah. Right.
So I attempted Mount Everest in 2021, actually.
Was that when you got COVID?
Yeah, and I got COVID, and all the Sherpa got COVID. So it was a bit of a, it was a bit of a unusual kind of expedition in terms of it was very disorganized because like there was just there was chaos and nobody knew what to do. Right, nobody was expecting COVID to infiltrate. No. Like in actually on the eve of me trying to attempt the summit, it got shut down.
I imagine it's still on the list, is it?
Yeah, it's in there somewhere. Yeah, it's a long list.
The mountaineering thing perplexes me in a way because one of the things about mountaineering that has always struck me is it's a place for utter selfishness, isn't it? I mean, really got to be utterly focused on yourself.
You know, I the mountaineering thing doesn't sit very cool. Like, I'm not drawn back. Like, I would like to stand. I would love to stand on top of the world, and come home safely. I'm not in a hurry back to mountains.
What are you drawn to now? Is there something that's pulling you?
Physically, not massively, because I feel like I've done everything.
So
yeah, so there's not huge. It's more the side of sharing now, and it's more the side of giving, and helping others with what I've learned. You know, I think I got to that point.
What do you do now to relax? I mean, do you ever actually relax?
Very good.
Do you listen
question.
To music? Do you read a book? Do you watch Netflix like the rest of us? You know, what do you do? What do you do?
I would have, if you'd asked me that question 3 years ago, I would have probably listed off, you know, I read a book or go for a walk. But when you have a 2.5-year-old, there's not much downtime.
And a wee baby as well.
And a wee baby as well. So yeah, there's not much time for relaxing. I think at the end of the day, and she's going to bed, I'm fit for bed as well. So I had a dog passed away a couple of years ago who was very special to me, Elmo, Golden Retriever. So yeah, walking him was a big thing for me. You know,
are there any armchairs in your house? Like the people actually do sit in?
I'm so glad to tell you there are, yes.
Yeah. And do you ever use them?
We do use them, yeah, a little bit, but not as much as I'd like.
So what's your life like in Australia with your family?
So we live very close to the beach. We spend a lot of time between the playground with Elodie, my oldest, and down the beach, you know. It's only a 5-minute cycle. So, just working on the laptop mostly during the day and just trying to, you know, write or create or do admin, you know. So and train, of course.
And Damien, after a while of that, and it sounds absolutely idyllic and beautiful and very family oriented, do you get restless?
Yes. Yeah, I do a little bit. Like, I'm pretty, you know, what would you say? I'm pretty content with life generally, but I'm also ambitious. You know, I want to make the most of it. So I don't think the two, you know, they can work together. So I'm often thinking about, you know, well, you know, where am I going? What's next? What do I want to do? I love creating. I love learning. So I think when you have those deep pulls, you want to be doing stuff, right? You just, So I do get a bit restless. I love the journey of working towards something meaningful. That's a beautiful, beautiful journey. I think there's so much richness in that.
One of the things that we haven't touched on, only very vaguely, as I was sort of joking about when you were out on the ocean and you weren't saying the rosary, but back home were your mummy and daddy lighting candles. And
they were probably saying the rosary.
Because, you know, in the Irish tradition, you know, that's what we light the candles.
That's right.
You know, go to the church, say the masses or whatever, or go to the service. None of that has entered your discussion at all, which I find fascinating.
So there is an element of like, mam, say I lit a candle for you there. And that's very unusual, like, because we're not a religious family. So I'm like, oh yeah, Jesus, you didn't you know, you didn't set a light when you walked in the doors of the church, like, kind of thing, you know. This will be on the boat, like, I'll be having this conversation with her, you know. So, I think deep down, they, you know, I try to bring them as close, so, like, particularly Mam, because she has deep fears of the ocean and all that. So I try and make it as kind of clear as I can, like, this is how, and this is the depth of preparation I'm going into to be safe, you know. So I'm just trying to relieve, I suppose, some of, I never do it all, right, but some of the fear that she might have, just so she knows that, you know, I'm highly prepared for what might come at me, and I have the capacities to deal with at least everything, at least I'm training to deal with what's within my control. So I hope that kind of alleviates and some of the stress and the fear that they might have with what I'm doing. And you know, that's something I feel, that if I do that, I'm generating there's a level of trust, as much as they can trust it, but there is a level of trust in that he knows what he's doing, like, and he's on top of this.
The spiritual side of you, or is there that spiritual side at all? I mean, when you're out doing all this stuff at any time, are you saying to yourself, I'm not alone? Or are you saying, I'm alone and I'm well prepared?
Yeah, I always struggle with that word a little bit, because I don't have a great connection or clarity with what it means to me, like, spirituality. But I'm a very internal person, and I have a good map of what my internal world looks like, my mind and my body and my emotions and at least my character. And I have a deep trust in myself and my character and how I've lived.
That is spiritual. Yeah.
So that's what that's where I come to when in those moments of deep despair and difficulty that I would have had on particularly the North Atlantic. You know, I have a deep belief in myself, I have a deep respect for myself, and I have a deep trust, and I just come back into it, you know, into internally, and I try to figure out where I'm at and what I'm feeling, and feel that, and try, if it's a state that needs to be, if it's a state that is holding me back, if it's affecting my ability to do the job that I'm there to do, well, then it's something I have good tools around changing.
Before we finish, we were both wondering about, I don't know, is it a mantra of yours?
Oh, yeah.
Chop wood, carry water. Yeah. What is it? What do you mean?
It's something I came across just, I was reading, I can't remember if it was a website or a book, but it was it's a Zen Buddhist koan, and it's the full koan is, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And it's four words, right? Chop wood, carry water, part of it at least. But it's a magical little phrase. Like, it's a refocuser, and it's an energy inducing change. You know, when things got really tough, and, you know, when I've been blown back, you know, mile after mile, and all that ground, day after day, you feel like you're not making any ground. It was just, well, you know, bring in my mind, like, in terms of, I wrote it on the cabin above where I slept, you know, and it was just something that would bring my mind back to, well, what's going to get you there? It's the work, right? So you just got to keep to chop wood, carry water, chop wood, carry water. So it's something that, it's a phrase I just love, you know. I have deep connection with it, even though I wouldn't be able to explain some of that deep connection, if you understand. It just resonates within me. It's amazing, and it's really important to have these big, meaningful goals. But the real essence, the real richness is in the chopping wood and carrying water. It's in the journey to get there. It's in the work you do to get to where you want to get to. So,
is that your legacy, really? Is that a summation of what you're about?
It is, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I it's a value that I would like to be known for, somebody who has a strong work ethic. Is it my legacy? It's something I hope I can pass on to others, among other things, right? I really, I want to I want to realize my potential, whatever that means, right? But I want to, while I have the time, I want to do as much as I can do to realize my potential, and I want to make an impact in other people's lives.
Like when things go wrong, like the day you capsize three times, do you curse?
Yeah.
Swear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Okay then.
I have like, plenty of footage, hours of footage of me effing and blinding. That's right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Heavily edited that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, you have to have a very aggressive mindset to take on an ocean roll. Mm. Like, you have to be extraordinarily bullish. In a fight, you can never win. You can never win that fight. You can survive it. And to survive it, you have to be aggressive to the point of nearly ignorance to push forward, to keep driving forward, to keep driving forward. So there's often conversations, let's say, with the ocean, me shouting at the ocean in like almost defiance. Like now that's on days where I need to do something to change this state, because I need to elicit some sort of emotion here. So sometimes it just has to be verbal. You just have to kind of get it from out of your gut, you know, and start shouting at the ocean, and it brings you out of that kind of lull or that kind of self-pity state that you're in, and you can kind of kick on then.
And is that anything, Damien, to do with the fact that you don't swim? Like, you know, the way in old Irish traditions, like Peg and that, people didn't learn how to swim because they always had this philosophy that the Cuidic an Varige, that the sea will have its own.
Yeah.
Do you feel that in a way?
It was quicker to drown. You're more likely to just, you're going to drown anyway, so you might as well drown quickly.
Because you said you can never
is that true,
the better of the ocean.
Did you experience the reality of that?
I did. Yeah. I actually, during that three capsizes I told you about, so on the second one, two oars got torn. This is the ferocity of what I was going through. Two oars that had been tied down on either end, they'd been torn off the boat, but they were still attached on the far end. So I was looking at them in the cabin going, so I could see my harness as well down the other end. So I'm like looking at the two oars going, I cannot afford to lose them. Like, because if I do, I'm down to only three, and you're kind of guaranteed that you're going to break them. So I was like, I have to go out, but I'm going out into these 12 meter waves. And if it's wrong, if it's the timing is terrible, then I'm getting kicked off the boat. So I was weighing this up and I was looking at the oars. I was like, I have to go for it. So I got out that cabin hatch as quickly as I could. I had 4 points of contact as much as I could with the bot. Like, I literally crawled, like kind of scampered, crawled across the deck. No, big waves, right? Wild storm. Grabbed in one oar and I was holding on to the other one in the water as I was trying to take in the one on my left hand side, but I'd needed two hands. So I released that for a split second. Grabbed in this one on my left-hand side, went back to grab the right one, was 75 meters away, at least, in the waves. So that's the same thing if I fall in. If I'm not attached to the boat, I'm 75 meters away in seconds, you know, and it wouldn't matter if you're Michael Phelps.
It wouldn't matter, no, it wouldn't make a difference.
No, you're just delaying the inevitable, yeah.
Do you know, having had this conversation with you, Damien, There's a lovely feeling of, okay, you do undertake these incredible exploits, and you do have a very introspective aspect. You know, you're very in tune with your mental agility as well. It's almost like the French, you know, you're very bien dans sa peau, you know, good in your skin. Mm. You just, I don't know, there's something very sound and balanced, even though there are other ways in which you could say very unbalanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel that about yourself?
Yeah, I think when you live the way I've lived and you have to push, right, you have, like, I was pushed by rugby. I pushed myself, of course, but I was pushed by the demands of the environments. And you when you do that, when you live that way, you see a lot of sides to yourself that you mightn't like. You know, your shadow, as Carl Jung calls it. But the more time you spend in those states, you realize that they're just, you accept them, you accept that they're part of you, you know, you're not running away from it, you know, so you accept the good and the bad. And it's just information, right? So if it's information you can do something about as well, if you want, you can approach that side of yourself that you don't like, and you can change it. Like, you can, if you put in the focus and the time, you can change it. So I feel I've done that with parts of myself that I didn't like, and I've upgraded myself, if you want, mentally or emotionally, or maybe you might say I've deepened myself. And the parts that are that I don't feel, you know, that I just accept, that's equally empowering, right? You go, oh, that's me, you know? Yeah. So you know yourself very well, basically, because, you know, you're pushing into weakness, you're pushing into doubt, you're pushing into fragility, and you're seeing a side of yourself that, you know, mightn't feel good at first. But if you spend enough time in there, you learn to perceive it better. I think that initial perception can push people away from it, what it feels like, the negative emotion attached to it, because that can be, you know, that the human is wired to step away from that, not step into it. But you can find a way to step into it and expose yourself to it, and you learn to either do something about it or just accept it, you know, and then that makes you, as you said, very comfortable in
very
who you are.
In your own skin.
What I'm intrigued by is the fact that without any sense of ego or narcissism, not a trace of it, you find your own selfness, not selfishness, but selfness, endlessly fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's something that a lot of people miss in their lives.
Yeah.
Because they're always looking for fascination somewhere else. Mm. Some other person has it. That celebrity has it. You know, that stuff has it that makes your skin do whatever. Or, that it's always outside of the self rather than in the interior. And I just find that in itself is just so, it's so fresh to listen to. I find that extraordinary. That's the uniqueness that you bring.
Yeah. Thanks.
And full of honesty.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I think I've learned to be more honest. You know, I wouldn't have said I was always that way. But again, it's what these, by living through these values that are important to me, it's what that gives me, you know, like it makes me, it really makes life peaceful. You know, you're walking around in a state of peace, basically, until Elodie kind of is one. The one person who can push my peaceful buttons is my little 2.5-year-old. Everyone else has no hope, but she just seems to have a button that she knows.
Well, you've shared an awful lot with us during this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so
Mary,
much.
When we're going out doing our 10,000 steps, we'll be thinking of Damien.
Chop wood, carry water.
That's it. Gourmet Malaga. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Fantastic.
Damien.
Whatever's in front of you, I hope you get all the rewards you deserve.
Thank you very much. It was an honour.
Mary, what a presence. What a man. What an adventurer. You know, he's a big physical man, but he's gentle. I find him very reflective and very insightful into, you know, the workings of his mind and his body.
He's no softy though, Mary.
No.
When you think of it, I mean, he really has, titanium in his spine to be able to take on that challenge that he did, to do something that was supposed to be a two-hander when he was heading out, you know, having company all the way across the lone Atlantic and then ending up doing it on his own. I mean, I'm the mother of three rowers. My kids were all rowers. And honestly, if any one of them had ever suggested rowing across the Atlantic, I'd have said, make space for your mother because you're not going on your own. And which would have meant they wouldn't have been going at all, because to find the courage for that, the guts for that, and then the doing, the planning of it, I mean, the planning of it was extraordinary when you think that they headed out with very little money, you know, they had to prove themselves in order to be able to have people say, actually, what you did was worthwhile and it was doable. I am enthralled to that determination and the courage, just enthralled to it. Mm-hmm.
And that's it for this episode of Changing Times.
Our thanks to researcher Anne-Marie Staunton.
And to our producer, Enda Grace.
So please don't forget to subscribe to Changing Times, for it really does mean the world to us that you tune into us.
And also watch out for our updates on the various Dundara Television and Media social media, including Instagram and Facebook.
So from our studio here in Allenwood, bye.
Changing Times, the Allenwood Conversations.
Proudly supported by Kildare County Council.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.